Play action. Going for it all into the end zone, and it is caught. Blunt is in the backfield. LeGarrette Blunt swings to the outside, inside the 10. Blunt to the end zone. And they're going to snap it, and it's Trey Burton who throws caught. Foles. The pass into the end zone, and it is Corey Clement. Yes, touchdown.
On one.
Clement flares out to the right. Caught over the middle and into the end zone. Zach Ertz for the touchdown.
You are flying high on the Super Bowl champion Locked On Eagles show. My God, Ben, how you doing? But Benjamin Solak of Bleeding Green Nation, NDT Scouting. How are you, brother?
Listen, in short, go Birds. Basically, fly Eagles fly. Moral of the story, Super Bowl champions. If I had to pick one phrase really to describe it, it would be Nick Foles Super Bowl MVP. I think that also Eagles are the best team in the league. Probably I would also like to say go Birds, because I've already said that. I feel like I've already said that. I don't know about you. I still am not certain that this is real. We're recording this on Monday night. I have engaged in a full 24 hours of activity since the supposed alleged Eagles Super Bowl victory, and I'm still not positive I'm not in a simulation.
Do you feel like at some point someone's going to come and say, no, that touchdown catch by Corey Clement or the touchdown catch by Zach Ertz does not stand? Players will resume play at 8 p.m.
What I think is going to happen is I'm going to read an article tomorrow that says, I hope you all enjoyed the debut of the new incredible Madden graphics. On Sunday. Super Bowl kicks off on Sunday, which obviously that's a slight pot shot at the fact that all of NBC's graphics sucked for the entire night, which I found hysterical. Here's my favorite stat from the night, though, Mike. Here's my favorite stat from the game. The Eagles are 1-0 in Super Bowls in years that we are co-hosting the Locked On Eagles podcast.
That's right? Correct.
Not a lot of people know that. People forget that, Mike. In the years that we have co-hosted the Locked On Eagles podcast, the Eagles have won a Super Bowl in every single one of those years. So you're welcome. It's really the moral of the story here. Go Birds.
And we want to thank all of you for joining us in this journey in our first year as the Locked On Eagles hosts, culminating in a Super Bowl win. I can't say it enough. The Eagles are your Super Bowl 52 champions. Bill Belichick has passed the torch to Doug Peterson.
As the greatest Peterson coach took the charge.
On the planet Earth. He took it. He
kicked
snatched
Doug
it from
Peterson
him.
In the balls. Or no, he kicked Bill Belichick in the balls. Spat in his face. Threw a touchdown pass to Nick Foles because Brady couldn't pull that off. And then took the torch from him.
Nick Foles, Super Bowl MVP. Also with a receiving touchdown in this game. We talked about it. We talked about the aggression that the Eagles were going to have to play with on fourth down. They showed it again. They went for it twice on fourth. They got it both times. Dougie P is confident in this team. He's confident in his play calling. It has paid off. The players love it. They rally around it. This was a fantastic offensively. This was the best offensive performance that I think we've seen other than maybe the Vikings game this year, which was another amazing performance. Ben, Nick Foles, my word, he deserves all of this for what he's been through. He's been incredible.
Listen, Nick Foles is our baby. This is our year. I feel comfortable saying it now. We did not even put any sort of like, not even did we not talk about it on the podcast. We didn't even talk about potentially talking on the podcast about what happens if Nick Foles plays like he did in the Vikings game. Because that was so aberrative. We were positive that that would not happen. Like, there was no, we didn't even give, like I spent the entire week talking about, like, all right, if Nick Foles is at his worst, what do we do? Because nobody and their mother, Nick Foles, his wife and baby daughter, didn't think he was going to play as well as he did in the Vikings game against the Patriots. It's against the Patriots. It was unbelievable. And let me tell you something, Michael, for me, just simply because the way that I'm hardwired, the way that we do analysis, I'm looking at Jacksonville's pick at 29, and I'm just thinking to myself, oh boy, Jacksonville Jaguars had to sit at home and watch Nick Foles do what Blake Bortles could not do to beat the Patriots, okay? Which, what? It could not make it happen. Foles went out and did it 2 weeks later. And you could get Foles at a much cheaper price tag than you would have to get Blake Bortles at. Because remember, they're in a situation where they have to extend Blake Bortles, I believe, either this year or next year. I'm not positive. Right. I feel like, is it this year?
Bortles?
Either way.
Yeah, doesn't matter with Bortles.
And also, let's not forget, Nick Foles, only 4 years older than Blake Bortles. Really, it's three, right. too, because Foles just turned 29, and Bortles is going to turn 26 in April, right?
Yeah.
To me, I'm looking at that Jacksonville Jaguars first-round selection, and that performance on at the Super Bowl, right? A first-round pick is heavy for Foles. That's heavy. But late first for a team that's just a quarterback away, that just lost to the Patriots, Michael, listen.
Look, we have all offseason to talk about that. I want to go over some quick stats. 1,151 yards, the most in any NFL game ever. Not just the Super Bowl. That includes playoffs, regular season, all of that. The only time in NFL history that a team has had over 600 offensive yards and lost the New England Patriots. Oh, it's amazing. Ben, this was a track meet of epic proportions, and both offenses were dialed in. And what happened when Tom Brady gets the ball back with 2 minutes left? A lot of people are thinking, we've seen this movie before. Tom Brady's just going to march right down and shove it up our butts. But Brandon Graham, just like Mark Schofield was talking about his fear for this game, was Brandon Graham kicking inside, beating Shaq Mason, getting to the ball for the only sack of the game in the most clutch moment. You couldn't be happier for a better human being than Brandon Graham than I am right now.
I'd like to, if you don't mind, take this moment to just say, firstly, I said that my ideal Super Bowl win was us stopping Brady on a potentially game-winning drive. We stopped him on that, and then we stopped him on a game-tying drive, potentially. So that's two for two. Great feeling, obviously. And then also, my MVP coming into the game was Brandon Graham.
Right.
I think that you could have, obviously, like, a case could have, that was the most valuable play, right?
Right.
Graham, may, not the most valuable player. You know, Nick Foles had an exceptional four quarters, undoubtedly. But most valuable play right there was that play by Brandon Graham. And that's a good segue into talking about the fact that the pressure on Brady all game was exactly what it needed to be. And yes, they put up 600 yards of offense. I'm not disputing that. You know what helps putting up 600 yards of offense? Having really good special teams consistently put you down, like, far away, okay? So that's number one. But whatever. There was complaints about the pressure, especially in the second half, which absolutely, like you can't get pressure on every play. This is very important to remember. If you watch a third down and six where Brady has time and then delivers it down the field and you go, where's the pressure been all game? You haven't been watching the entire game. You've been watching one play, okay?
Right.
The pressure is consistently moving Brady off of his location, forcing him to release from bad angles. So often it affected but did not show up in the box score, right? And you can go and find Brady's greatest games. Go find his games with his most amazing statistical output, right? And you'll see a guy who slices and dices with extreme precision, with perfect timing, consistently getting the ball where it belongs, good placement, maximizing yak. What you saw on Sunday was a guy who was chucking up deep balls, 50-50 balls that were not accurate. They were just close enough to a guy who was wide open because the Eagles' secondary struggled mightily.
Right.
Okay, and so I was very impressed by the way the pressure was all night long. I think that there was a good balance of first-team, second-team defensive line. They did not sell out too much to the second-team defensive line, but they still had the first-team defensive line healthy and rested for those final drives, which was obviously crucial. And then when one big play needed to be made, Brandon Graham finally got there, right? And to me, they ended the game with 9 quarterback hits on Brady. That is the most Brady's been hit all season. Okay? And so I don't know what else you would have wanted from the pressure. I think that, yes, Jim Schwartz absolutely has a job to do, and Corey Undlin as well, working, to me, more on defensive back technique than defensive back deployment. Ronald Darby was so petrified of Brandon Cooks that could have been a serious problem if Cooks doesn't go out on a perfectly legal hit from Malcolm Jenkins, by the way.
Yep.
But anytime Cooks, like, broke a direction, Ronald Darby was turning and running. Cooks had his back the entire game. Right, that was concerning. And then obviously Jalen Mills ate a double move, which shocked everybody. So they got to work on technique with those defensive backs, in my opinion. Very excited to see Sidney Jones next season, obviously. But the safeties had quite a good game. The corners were the issue. Moral of the story, good job by Jim Schwartz. Good job by the pressure. Graham made a play when it counted.
So we're going to get into, was Ben worried at any point? Was Michael worried at any point? But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at TeePublic. Put Locked On Eagles in the search bar. Ben, we got a new shirt for the Super Bowl win. You want to tell the gentle listeners about it?
Oh yeah, we got a very fresh new shirt. The title of this shirt is "How Many Rings?" Question mark. And you'll notice, we're very happy that we got to release it because we were worried that we wouldn't be able to. But it's wonderful. It's a great picture of Carson Wentz kind of looking out to the crowd, and it's captioned, "Looking for everyone who asked how many rings." Because listen, all I know is that I'm never getting asked that again. That is the greatest weight ever taken off of my shoulders. Just the onus is gone, and it means the world to me. I hate that question, and it's all gone forever. Amen.
The monkey is officially off our back. The Super Bowl champion Eagles official Locked On Eagles store. Put Locked On Eagles in the search bar at tpublic.com. Go get yourself the "All We Got, We All We Need" shirt. Go get yourself the how many rings shirt. Go get yourself a little teeny tiny baby onesie as well. Get all your Locked On Eagles swag at tpublic.com. Locked On Eagles in the search bar. Ben, at any point in this game, were you concerned? And if you were at multiple points, what was the most concerning point for you?
I'll be honest. I did not get nearly as concerned at any point as I anticipated. You know, like the most concerned I've been all preseason was probably against the Falcons at some point. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like when it was so frustrating when the Eagles kicked that field goal. They've been, you know, up by 3, up by 10, up by 3, up by 10, just exchanging blows with the Patriots in the second half. And then Elliott hits that field goal on what ended up being, you know, what really the second to last drive, in quotations, for Philadelphia. Obviously, they then got the drive after the Brandon Graham turnover. They hit that field goal and immediately said, "Oh, can't do that. Can't hit a field goal. Now it's only a 6-point lead against Brady." Okay, the Patriots defense had not stopped the Eagles at all. The Eagles did not score, if memory serves, on two drives. One was a punt. The other was the interception to Alshon Jeffery that was almost an amazing catch at the 5-yard line.
Gonna be a scoring drive.
Right. So the Patriots defense had done roughly nothing to stop the Philadelphia Eagles offense. Now, obviously, if you only get three, you're in a bit of a tricky situation because now instead of it being a track meet and you're just ahead by one or two possessions, now you're exchanging and it's going to be who gets the ball last, which is never a fun situation to be in, especially when it's Tom Brady. But to me, you were at a point where that defense had given up three straight scoring drives. They were going to get a stop eventually. Like I said, the pressure was consistently almost there and not quite. We had multiple blown coverages in the secondary that were a big problem, right? Gronk showed up for one drive, and then besides that was nothing else, which that's another thing. Gronk has one drive and we all start going crazy. Listen, if Gronk could do that every drive, they would do that every drive. You can't do that every drive. You go ahead, you move somebody besides Corey freaking Graham on him, and Gronk wasn't able to separate. Oh my goodness, you people. Like, nobody has any patience. Blah, blah, blah. But anyway, so likely I was my most concerned when obviously the Patriots took that 1-point lead. But that drive that brought Philadelphia all the way down, that 4th-and-1 call was absolutely masterful. 3rd-and-1, 4th-and-1, throwing the ball both times. I mean, it's terrifying to me. I would have loved to have just seen LeGarrette Blount. But whatever. Okay. They pulled it off. Thank God. And then I was a little bit worried when Philadelphia wasn't taking more time off the clock once they were down inside of the 30. I would have liked to have seen them do that. Because I'm all for aggressiveness, but I'm for aggressiveness when it's situationally beneficial. To me, in that moment, not necessarily a lack of aggressiveness, but Nelson Agholor maybe coming down in bounds, maybe taking it to 2nd-and-1 instead of 1st-and-10 to give us another down. You know what I mean? Like, Belichick was calling his timeouts with 2:30 left. Right, that means if he had one timeout left after that, you're able to walk him down, get a first down, go to the 2-minute warning. You can kneel that puppy out, kick a field goal, and walk home. Brady never touches the football, right? And so that, I was getting a little bit nervous there. But I didn't ever get super nervous. And it just had to do with the fact that the team, like, you know, quote unquote, shouldn't have been there anyway. Like, the Eagles were already defying the odds so greatly that no odd was going to terrify me. Like, what had they not yet conquered? What barrel had they not yet stared down and somehow escaped unscathed? You know what I mean? Yeah. And so I was confident in those guys. They played a great game. To me, like, you know, we talked about it. If they're going to win, they're going to jump out early and dominate pretty much wire to wire, and that's what they did. They jumped out early, and they were in control for pretty much that entire game. Patriots popped up by one, and then perfect scoring drive down to go ahead by six, and they put the kibosh in it, or go ahead by five, and then they put the kibosh in it.
Yeah, and like you said, I was definitely concerned by the fourth and one, although I felt confident that they would get it because, I mean, that's just Dougie P, man. He's going to dial one up, and he's going to get what he wants, and we're going to execute. The other point that I was, and you mentioned this too, I was super concerned after the second half, after the halftime adjustments were made, and we have Corey Graham on Rob Gronkowski. I'm like, this, I mean, you said he can't do that every drive. He was going to do that every drive if that continued. You know what I mean?
Right, I meant like, he can't do that every drive in the sense that, like, we don't have a five-year-old coordinating the defense. But like, no, it's all right, Corey, try harder. Like, no, get Corey Graham off Rob Gronkowski, okay?
Yeah, yeah, that was really concerning to me. I'm like, this is not sustainable whatsoever. But even then, it was like, well, offense is moving. We're going to continue to move the ball on offense. We're going to score points. We had over 500 yards of total offense. And it was Blunt in the ground game that was the most effective. Ajayi had an effective day. Corey Clement, my word, man. I want to apologize to Corey Clement formally.
We owe him an apology.
We really do. For calling him a Jag, just a guy, when we drafted him and in the preseason. And man, what a contribution he has made to this team. He has just been solid in every aspect. He doesn't make mistakes. Rock solid type of guy. Any other performances stand out to you? I know Ertz and Aguilar had big days too.
Right. To me, the Corey Clement playing the way he's playing, to me, is such a reflection on culture. And I'm sure in a ensuing podcast later in the week, we're going to dedicate a lot of time to all the decisions that Doug Peterson made, from schemes, from situational play calling, to what he does for this locker room, that really let us say confidently he outcoached the greatest coach that we've ever seen, right? But to, you know, a little preview, Corey Clement is the way that he is. I fully believe because of culture. I fully believe that, because you don't get a guy who had less than 30 receptions in his college career, Mike, his college career, less than 30 receptions. And he all of a sudden becomes a dynamic receiving back. He also running wheel routes out of the backfield, stacking linebackers, right? The reason this happens is because Darren Sproles and Danelle Pumphrey go down, and you turn to an undrafted rookie free agent you brought in, who Philadelphia means something to him, and this team says, listen, here's a void. If you want to be on it, fill it, right? Yeah. And then and for that opportunity to exist, for a guy to have that window, obviously, you know, some fortune as well with the injuries that were ahead of him, to prove himself, and then to be able to reinforce that, to supplement that, to grow that, to develop that over the regular season. He got more and more involved as the weeks went on, and then to throw him the football 30 yards down the field in the Super Bowl against the Patriots. Are you kidding me? Ouch. Oh, incredible. To me, my big shout out goes to a guy who I didn't think got a lot of hype, a lot of run. But Malcolm Jenkins had a stellar game. Malcolm Jenkins had a stellar game. James White, not much of a factor. Deion Lewis, not much of a factor. They finally figured out, like, oh, Rex Burkhead. If we get Burkhead out of here, Jenkins isn't following him around. This is the one where Jenkins isn't tracking Burkhead. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that Jenkins was spending more time as Gronk due to the fact that Corey Graham is hot garbage. Sorry, Corey. But Malcolm Jenkins, an incredible first half, covering the running backs for sure. He provided that positional versatility. He was constantly downplaying linebacker. Philly was in dime so much, even quarter occasionally as well, or dollar, some people call it, which is why Corey Graham saw the field so often. And then, to me, he was very tone-setting. He was flying. He was trying to take people's heads off, even before Brandon Cooks thing. Yeah, he took Brandon Cooks' heads off. But he was very clearly moving with a purpose. When they came out to Dreams and Nightmares, I remember he was getting exceptionally lit, right? He just seemed to be the driving force on that defense to me. And it was funny, you know, my father, who's a Steelers fan, I was watching the game with him, and asked me, he goes, so is Jenkins or Fletcher Cox the leader of the defense? And I said, well, it's Jordan Hicks, but he's not there. I said, Fletcher Cox is the better player. He's more impactful. He's at a position of greater impact, but it's Jenkins, because Jenkins just is a leader like that. And he led that defense very, very well on Sunday.
I 1000% agree. He is the emotional leader of this defense. Mm-hmm. He is the tone setter. He gets everybody going, man. And yeah, great game for him. You mentioned before with Corey Clement throwing the ball to him 30 yards down the field. Doug Peterson was aggressive this game and seemed to open up the playbook even more than he had in the past. He was not scared whatsoever. And we talked about it before, where they weren't saying Bill Belichick's name leading up to this game, because Doug Peterson was not coaching against Bill Belichick. He was coaching his team to prepare for a game, and he had full faith in this offense to throw downfield, make the big plays. They didn't get overly conservative. They also didn't get too cute for themselves as well. Brilliantly called game, brilliantly played. Alshon Jeffery had a big day as well.
I know. I do what have one more guy to talk about.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, we're sure going to talk about Doug Peterson. We've been talking mostly players entire time. My big shout out goes to my son, Jacob Elliott, who...
Are you wearing his jersey right now?
Mike, I've been wearing his jersey for the past like 3 days, okay? I'm not going to lie. Like, this thing is disgusting. I'm probably going to wear it until my Super Bowl championship hoodie arrives, and then I'm just going to wear that.
Yeah.
For the foreseeable future. But anyway, to me, the fact that Jake Elliott missed his first extra point and then came out and hit 240-plus yard field goals as a rookie kicker in the Super Bowl against the Patriots is huge. And I get that's in a dome, and he should be making those kicks, right? And I would imagine he was probably greatly assisted by the fact that Gostkowski went out and missed an extra point and a short field goal. Like, you know, that kind of helps you, like, humanize what's going on. You don't get too much in your head. But listen, Jake Elliott made three very, very clutch kicks in the back half of this game. Or no, excuse me, two. The two field goals were late in the game. The one to go up from 5-8 was massive. That's a massive kick. That is a high pressure kick. You are eliminating the ability of the Patriots to win in regulation with that kick.
Right.
Right? And he hit that puppy from 46 yards out.
And field position too, for sure. I agree. Yeah, huge kick.
And so we know what it's like mentally to be a kicker as a rookie. Obviously, it's so difficult. And then, you know, Jake Elliott, the Jason Peters, you know, like, no more misses, right? Like, Jake Elliott's been a guy who, and I would imagine he's he's very likely the leading horse for the Eagles kicking job moving forward. Obviously, they're going to give Caleb Sturgis a shot, but I think that Elliott is probably your dude. He's going to be a guy who misses some kicks. His mental resiliency, his mental flexibility there is very, very important. And he really demonstrated some maturity there. That was awesome to see. Obviously, I'm a very big Jake Elliott fan, so that was cool.
Yeah. Very, like you said, mentally resilient, just like this team. It fits what we do here, man. We're just mentally tough. We can do anything. We can overcome anything. Ben, the two plays I really wanted to ask you about. Okay. The Corey Clement touchdown, the Zach Ertz touchdown. In my opinion, there was a bobble on the Corey Clement one. Not sure if that was a touchdown. Not sure. Hard to overturn that. However, the Zach Ertz one, 100% sure that that was a touchdown. The guy took three steps, turned upfield, made a football move, became a runner, did all the things necessary that require you to call that a catch. And that's the thing, too. I thought Dez caught it as well. So if I thought he caught that, then Zach Ertz definitely caught his. What did you feel about those two calls?
So, as a note, it's so difficult to me to compare catches even within years, let alone year to year, because the rule has, if not by verbiage, by enforcement has changed. Just by as we understand, as we encounter different plays, right? As we just like see different situations where all of a sudden the catch rule applies. I think both of them were touchdowns. I'll tell you why. And I think like if I were explaining the catch rule and why it's a problem to people, these two catches would be perfect examples of how things get conflated, because the catch rule is interested in control of the football, right? And how to define control of the football. Very often we confuse the control of the football with the football not moving, which control of the football is inherently not the football not moving. Because think about it, like if I catch a football above my head and I tuck it into my body as I'm going to the ground and it never hits the ground, you would say I had control of it the entire time. That ball moved a lot. It was in my hands the entire time, but the ball relocated, right? And so then we talk about, okay, we mean moving without the intention of the receiver. The receiver didn't mean to move it, right? Well, it's very difficult to define intention when you're watching tape, right? So how do we do this? Well, we look for them to establish control, and then we look for them to maintain control. To me, Corey Clement, when that ball came in, he caught that ball not at a great angle, but he had that puppy pinned against his chest, and that ball was not moving. Then from what I saw, Corey Clement on his way to the ground reset that ball against his chest so as to not drop it. To me, it seemed very clearly as if he had that ball captured against his chest and then consciously decided, I'm going to reset this ball into my gut. Right. Now, he was getting hit while this happened, so it was not the cleanest of resets, right? He didn't like get it in like a perfect spot. But to me, that seems like I've caught it. I'm intentionally shuffling it inside of me so that I don't drop it, right? That's how that play struck me. And I think I feel comfortable saying that's objective. That's the trickier of the two. Zach Ertz, took a hike before he jumped. Are you drunk? What? No. Right. And that review took longer than the Clement one.
Oh my God.
And
no.
I was so, okay, right. And the Zach Ertz one is, you know, that's the other ugly head. The two, so one is control. The other is football move, right? This completely just transient, borderless thing that's a football move. Anybody who watches football knows that Zach Ertz caught that football and then started to do stuff with it, right? We all know that should be a catch. The dispute there, where Corey Clement, you could dispute whether or not he had initial control, which I think he did. The dispute with Zach Ertz is that how that rule has been called every single time? And the issue is, no two people are going to agree perfectly because the line between football move and not a football move doesn't exist. We don't know what it is, right? Yeah. To me, that's very clearly a football move. I'm sure to a lot of Patriots, Cowboys fans, that did not look like a football move. Whatever. To me, both of those were touchdowns. I feel comfortable saying that. I think that specifically the Corey Clement touchdown, through my interpretation, is a fantastic study, an investigative study, an example for the league to look at and say, why do we think, what happened in this play that uniquely makes us think he had control and didn't bobble it here? To me, it's when that ball freezes against his chest. It's not spiraling. It's not moving. Nothing. They've got to be able to figure that out and put that into words more firmly.
Yeah, I definitely agree there. And look, I want to get out on another. I want to get out in front of another conspiracy theory, because the fourth down touchdown, the Burton to Foles, the Philly special, the one where Doug really let him hang. There's some talk that Alshon Jeffrey was not on the line. The Eagles didn't have enough players on the line. Let me tell you this. I played wide receiver in high school. Every time I came to the line, I was supposed to be either on the line or off the line. And every time I got there, I look over to the ref, I put my hand out, and I tell him where I'm supposed to be. Am I on? Am I off? Right? So Alshon Jeffrey looks to the referee and asks him, am I on? The referee says yes. That's all Jeffrey needs to do. Stop the nonsense. Right. It didn't affect the play whatsoever.
Right. Two things. One, you could pick any random game in the NFL played this season, and I could find you three plays where a wide receiver isn't as on the line as he should be. Maybe five. Right.
Yeah.
Number two, if any Eagle fan will know about the point because of the Nelson Aguilar penalty on the 53-yard touchdown of Zach Ertz against the Seahawks, because Aguilar's looking down at the ball. He points to the side judge on the opposite side to say, I'm on the line. The side judge starts gesturing forward saying, you're not on the line, you have to move forward. Aguilar never looks at the side judge. Greg Lewis is throwing a hissy fit on the sideline, the wide receiver coach. Aguilar never looks to make sure the ref's like, yeah, you're good. And then he gets penalized on what would have been a key touchdown against the Seattle Seahawks. So, yes, we're very familiar with the pointing, you know, little etiquette there. Whatever. Reaching for some nonsense.
Affect the play at all. Didn't affect the play at all. And what a ballsy call by Doug Peterson, who really let him hang. Two big-time fourth down calls. Out-coached the best coach in the history that I've seen in my adult life. I can't, you know, that for Doug Peterson, honestly, feels like, and this gets to the more of the looking to the future, was that a passing of the torch? Because it feels like, to me, as long as we have Doug Peterson, as long as we have Carson Wentz moving forward, this could be the start of a dynasty and the end of one as well. Would you agree with that?
In my elation on Sunday, I fired off the tweet where I said, listen, as I've said many times so far in this podcast, listen, the final hurdle to me is when Joe Douglas inevitably moves on from the front office. We have to make sure that Howie's still got enough player personnel evaluators around him to know what he's doing. Once that hurdle is cleared, you've got a young coach who ain't going anywhere. You got a young quarterback who ain't going anywhere. You got a young GM who ain't going anywhere. And they've already won one. Mike, they've won a Super Bowl. Mike, we won the Super Bowl.
won a freaking Super Bowl, man.
Obviously, people like to talk about the fact that things are locked up for next season. So many of the starters are coming back, which is obviously muy bueno. You know, I think that there's some work to do retooling the offensive line, just getting some youth up in there. Depth on the offensive line isn't great. Obviously, you're going to have to figure out some running back rotation situations, probably, and then linebacker, as far as like who are your starters, who can you trust to be here year to year, is the big question mark moving into the offseason. You answer those questions. Whether or not Douglas leaves within the next 2 to 3 years, Eagles will be competitive for the next 3 to 4 years. Looking long term, no reason to believe otherwise, right? So, obviously, predicting dynasties is one step above a crapshoot, but Philadelphia's got all of the requisite pieces. Now it's about you know, when we bleed, because, you know, this maybe after this Super Bowl we don't bleed, but after the next one, you know, you're going to lose a few guys. Do you have the tools in place to continually replenish, right? That's the final question to answer, yeah. Especially with Douglas being potentially gone. But, yeah, you got to feel good about it. As far as the Patriots dynasty ending, we talked about it last week. The Patriots have to spend an entire offseason with all of the narratives that were around them coming into this game, you know, with all the talk about people getting old and stuff, sitting on the fact that they lost a Super Bowl where Doug Peterson beat them. They were, like, it wasn't like the Patriots played badly. The Patriots played well and lost, which to me, that's not all, like, you know, the dynasty is crumbling. That's, the dynasty isn't immortal anymore. It, you know, right. There's a new top dog, right? And so maybe it's not immediate. Maybe, you know, the Patriots will likely still be competitive under Brady and Belichick for the next couple of seasons. But I don't think we've ever seen the armor as chinked as we see it right now.
Hmm. Yeah, and 1 year does not a dynasty make. There will be plenty of trials and tribulations along the way. However, if you don't feel good about winning a Super Bowl, by the way, the Eagles won a Super Bowl. Crazy. Oh, dude, it's still not really hitting home with me.
The Super Bowl, by the way, for those of you who don't know, is the most important thing that ever happens in the year, ever.
Maybe in my life, other than my son's being
born
and being married and all that. Okay, so I was watching it on Google Hangouts at the bar with my son that last part of the game. I called him up. I'm like, dude, oh my God. And it was when we scored the touchdown and then Brady gets the ball back on the sack strip. I'm looking at the screen of my son, and he's like, I can see he's getting emotional. I'm like, dude, you're going to make me cry. We got 2 more minutes to go. We got to lock in, man. We got to keep it together. Keep it together, man. But after the game, I took a moment to myself, teared up a little bit. Not going to lie. What about you? Any alligator tears?
Yeah. So, you know, fun fact about Ben, I cry at almost everything. I've not attended a wedding where I have not cried. I've cried at the end of multiple movies. I've cried at the end of multiple books. I did not cry at the end of the game because, to me, once that strip sack hit, I was kind of already mentally there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I cried when they were walking the Lombardi up, so, you know, and everybody was kissing it. And, like, you know, an eagle would pop on screen and be like, oh, Brandon Brooks deserves this so much. He's so underrated. He's such a great guard. Be like, oh, I'm so happy Brandon Brooks kissed it. And then the next eagle pop up and Chris Maragos got injured. He's such a good special teamer. He's such a good leader. Oh, Chris Maragos. And the next eagle would pop up and every time it would just, like, hit me again and again. So I cried during that.
Yeah.
You know, and then obviously, like, you know, Nick Foles.
Yeah,
is a man. Nick Foles. There's a quote that I'll send you after the show, Mike. You know, Charlotte Wilder of SB Nation tweeted it out. It's from some article. I haven't read the article, but just Nick Foles is genuine and pure and humble, and he's the sort of person I aspire to be like, just from a demeanor, a character level. You know, forget accolades, forget athleticism, forget successes. He's just a good man, and I don't know, him holding his daughter and just talking about it, it overwhelmed me. So I couldn't be more glad.
Yeah. So many fantastic moments for so many fantastic fans. The Super Bowl is in the books. We got one. Ben, what else do we have for the gentle listeners?
Howdy, gentle listeners. Super Bowl winning gentle listeners, that is. This is the Locked On Super Bowl winning Eagles podcast. Michael Kist at Michael Kist NFL. Benjamin Solak at Benjamin Solak on Twitter. We thank you so much for listening. We are very excited for the offseason with you. Obviously, off seasons are more fun when they're as late as possible and you have a nice shiny trophy to go with them. That being said, Mike and I both have extensive background in draft work. You would have heard it in the beginning of the show if we weren't so elated, but I'm with NDT Scouting, which is an NFL draft media outlet, and then Mike does work for Breaking Football and Inside the Pylon, both X's and O's work related to the draft, and so we are pumped to give you very in-depth Eagle-specific draft coverage across the rest of the offseason. We've got a lot of good stuff cooking up for you guys as well, so make sure you're constantly tuning in for news, because we may have a few big announcements coming up in the weeks to come. That being said, we do always appreciate 5-star ratings and reviews. They make us smile. They make the podcast do even better than it already is doing. So please leave those on whatever app you've been listening. And to conclude, Mike, go Birds.
Keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles. Fly, Super Bowl Eagles, fly.
Caca!
Super Bowl winning caca. Majestic.
An eagle holding the Lombardi trophy flies off to the horizon.
It's flapping the wings.